I actually felt a little bit betrayed. I felt betrayed by God for some reason.
You know, we've had like jokes as well, like, put me in this river, put my ashes in that river.
Yeah,
I'll just put you there, actually. Like,
and when I'm not here and, you know, when they do have to go through all of this, I want them to remember the laughs we had about it.
I'm Rena Dittianabil, aka Mummy Imperfect. Thanks for joining me and welcome to my sisterhood. The Sisterhood of Mummy Imperfect, if you're not aware, is a weekly podcast that celebrates and explores all things womanhood and motherhood. Now, I have had a lot of strong women on here who are always very open about their experiences, and a lot of my guests have had to navigate a lot of ups and downs in life, but somehow they managed to come out of the other side still intact and still smiling. Today's guest is a lady who is a survivor. She's a mom of three. She's recently been diagnosed with cancer for the second time, and she wants to share her journey with everyone and is determined to laugh her way through it. So welcome to the Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect, Bharti Dogra.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rena. Thank you.
So Bharti, what made you want to share your story, and your journey of cancer?
Yeah. I think, you know, arguably you could say a lot of people, or there are unfortunately a lot of people that have gone through or are going through cancer. And what I want to share with people is that this is the second time around that I was diagnosed. And I just want people to know that it is possible to remain positive throughout the journey. I do believe a great deal of it does have to do with mindset as well. And again, I know some people will say that's an easier thing to say than actually do. But going through cancer the second time round, I wanted to share my story to let people know that yes, I have been through it second time round, and yes, I will survive it this time. You know, despite what doctors have said or what the prognosis is, or you know, I will be able to survive this, whether it's through positivity, whether it's through keeping the mindset, whether it's just talking to people, and even if I can help a handful of people, a handful of ladies, or you know, anyone going through challenges, to get up in the morning and just, you know, have their cup of tea or get up and get dressed, then I feel that's an achievement. And also I just want to add that it's not necessarily challenges through cancer, it's any challenges in life, really. You know, the approach, I believe the approach is to try and remain positive and always try and find, there's always something to be grateful for every day, yeah, right? Yeah. So try and focus on that. And again, like I said, any challenge in life, if I can just help a handful of people, then I feel I've achieved something.
And I feel like in life, sometimes people do think, oh, you know, I can only help a handful of people. I can't do this. How many people am I going to affect? But that's the whole ripple effect of life, right?
You know, exactly.
Even if one person, if you get something from one person and then that changes your mindset about something, you know, it affects your soul in some way, you pass it on.
Yeah.
It's just, I think, so I yeah. think what you said is totally, it's so important.
Yeah. And when I started my Instagram page, Laughing With Cancer, I mean, it's only been, I think, about week 10 days that I started it. And scrolling through, I did see there are so many people out there with stories and journeys of cancer. But what makes my story different, you know, why would I be any different to anyone else? I could have easily, you know, said, oh God, you know, well, there's so many out there. Why would anyone listen to me, or why would anyone look to me? But sometimes you don't know who you resonate with. You don't know what you say or what you do clicks with somebody, yeah. You know, and I really hope that I do resonate with people. And I really do hope that I can help people, you know, just by seeing my journey. Yes, it's awful, you know, and, you know, yes, I don't know what the future holds. I know what I've been told, but again, I've just got to remain positive.
And yeah, I mean, like you said, there must, you know, it is awful, and there must be a lot of people who don't know what to say to you. And you know, for me, like preparing to kind of talk to you and stuff, you know, I'm not going to be here going, oh my God, but you know, I'm so sorry. I'm sure you've had all of that, and obviously it is not nice. Yeah. You know, you don't want to be in this situation. Nobody wants to be in this situation. I'm just here to just talk to you, woman to woman,
yeah,
you know what I mean,
yeah.
And hear what you have to say about it, your story. And, you know, I know you must have had, to this day, you probably have people saying things to you, like being, you know, overly sympathetic in a way that maybe, I don't know, like how do you feel about that?
Well, yeah, that was just it. When I was initially diagnosed back in December 2019, I mean, for me, my world fell apart. It was second time round. And for me, the challenges, unfortunately, the challenges I've had through life isn't just cancer. There's been a whole lot that I've been through, which I'm hoping one day, you know, I will be able to tell my complete story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's been a lot of challenges that I went through. But going through all of those, going through all the hurdles and everything, back in 2019, summer 2019, I'd actually felt that, yeah, you know, my life is on track now. We're settled, the kids are settled, finished university, etc. And, you know, life for me is actually starting now. You know, I can get to enjoy my life. But then I got diagnosed in December and that was it. I was like, I actually felt a little bit betrayed. I felt betrayed by God. For some reason, you know, I was just like, okay, I've put my, you know, I am a believer. And for me, it was, you know, I've got my life back on track. And now suddenly what? This has happened? Why? You know, why me again? Why? So all of these questions were going through my head. And then immediately it was, you know, being told that you have a timeline. And it was getting my head around that and actually comprehending what that meant for me, my family, my children. It's just me and my three children, you know, that are here. And it was understanding what that meant for them. Yes, my children are older. Yes, they finished university and, you know, are in currently now in jobs, etc. But they're still my children at the end of the day. I'm still a single parent. And I, for me, it was still making sure that everything was in place. What do they have? How much? We just bought a house, you know, having a mortgage, having everything. You know, all of this was just, it was just like, you know, all these questions, just like a cobweb through my head. Like, what do I do? How am I going to do all of this? Mm-hmm. So it took a long time to actually comprehend what this means, you know, and at that time, and it's, I don't blame anyone for it, but you know, when everyone's asking, how do you feel? How are you? There's no answer for it. What do you say? And everyone's trying to be kind to you, but you sort of think, you know, I don't know what to say. You know, the situation is what it is and I've just got to get up and deal with it. And I think that's always been my approach. Even first time round, it was, okay, I've got this, but we've diagnosed it. Let's just deal with it and get on with it. And I think that was my approach. This time it took me longer to get to that place or that mindset purely because of the seriousness, you know. And again, you know, people do say that, you know, no one knows how long they have or you could get knocked down by a bus tomorrow or whatever. Appreciate all of that. But when you're sitting in front of somebody and somebody actually tells you that, you know, this is an average timeline of what you have, I think that has a greater impact mentally. You know, and immediately you've got just got, you know, things just flashing in front of you and, you know, how do I do this? What do I do? And, you know, being on your own as well. I don't have any family here in England. All my family are in India. So not having any family as well, you know, it's been a huge challenge that way. But again, it took me a long time to get to that mindset and that place to think, okay, fine. We've diagnosed it. We know what it is. We're starting treatment. So let's just deal with it, basically. Deal with it.
So the first time around, how many years ago was that? And is it breast cancer we're talking about?
Yes. So first time around, I was diagnosed in May 2015.
Okay.
And that was breast cancer. I had a mastectomy done. So I had the mastectomy done. So I had to go through all of the emotional ups and downs with the mastectomy.
Just my right side.
Okay. Just my right side. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then going through emotional ups and downs with that. I had a reconstruction done. You know, and then my oncologist had cut the umbilical cord. So he likes to say, you know, to say, okay, fine, you're okay. So he'd released me from his surgery, so to speak. So I wasn't seeing him on my, you know, every few months appointments, which was fine. So everything was looking up. You know, I've had it, I've cleared it, move on. You know,
and how many years did that take, though? How many years did that take to clear it? from when you were diagnosed? So
diagnosed in 15, and he cut the cord in 2018. So okay, 3 years.
That's quite a chunk of time, yeah. Isn't it?
It is. If you think about it, a year of it was with chemo.
Uh-huh.
So I went through IV chemo the first time. So again, that's just an awful, awful phase. And I never wish it upon anyone going through the IV chemo.
Makes you feel really ill.
Makes you feel ill. I lost all my hair. So I had to shave my hair off first. And then I lost all of my hair, obviously. The pain, I just cannot describe that pain that you go through with IV chemo. It's such a horrible, horrible pain, bone pain that you go through. It's just indescribable. And again, it was resorting to having morphine at night at home. So I was on oral morph, and you just want to do anything to stop that pain, just to stop that pain. Mm. You know, and then again, it impacts your skin, your looks, your everything. So I'd lost my confidence a lot. I really did lose my confidence. So again, it's building that confidence up again, getting back to work.
And were you a single mum at that point?
Yeah. So I have been since 2007.
Okay.
So and then trying to get back to work. You know, and then also for the kids, unfortunately, first time around, my daughters were doing their A-levels when I got diagnosed. And this time around, they had their finals and their final degree, final exams for their mm-hmm. degrees. So, you know, the timing's not been great that way.
But then it's like, you know, when's it ever going to be a right time?
It's never going to be the right
and
time,
especially
yeah.
with children. But I was going to say as well that, like, you know, as women, like, we try and make everything all right for everybody, you know. You know, oh, I need to do this for the kids, I need to do that for the kids. And often our own feelings we put on the back burner. And, you know, you're thinking, oh, but how is it going to affect the children? Like, just talk me through that a little bit, like how you kind of manage that, like their sadness about it and their worry. And then how much did you show them of what you were going through emotionally?
Yeah, so this is, I think this is just it. I think with kids, you're right. You know, it's always, you know, you sort of live for them, don't you? And try and do everything for them and make sure that they're okay. They have a good grounding. They've got a good base, you know, financially they're supported, etc. You know, that's what we try and do. But first time round, it was really, really difficult. Really difficult for me. My girls were doing their A-levels. So my son stayed with me. And he really did look after me. Really did. He, you know, just completely stepped up. And, you know, he was taking me to my chemos and et cetera. So, you know, he really, really did step up. And emotionally, I don't think I ever understood how much that impacted him. You know, it's just very difficult to hide away your own pain and emotions during that particular time. Mm. And again, so I was diagnosed in May, but I couldn't tell my children until the middle of June in 2015 because they had exams. So I waited for them to finish their exams and then, you know, sat down and told them. Again, this time around in 2019 as well. So I was diagnosed in December 2019, but I didn't tell them until mid-February 2020. And that was an awful time because I was going through so much pain. And I had to hide it. Not that I could hide the pain, but I couldn't come home from work and say to my son, oh my God, I've been in so much pain or this and that, or discuss it or anything, because I hadn't told him what I was going through. They had their suspicions. They, you know, thought something's not right or whatever, but I don't think they ever thought the severity would be such.
But then who did you share it with?
So when I first obviously diagnosed, touch wood, I've got a good few friends that I shared this with. So I managed to speak to them about it. But in terms of the children, it was only until February that I shared it with them. And when I did, it was such a relief because I actually said, you know what, it's so nice to actually come back from work and say, this is what my day has been.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, it's trying to protect them as much as you can.
Yeah.
And even now when I'm going through pain, etc., I try not to say too much because I just think it's a lot for them to deal with. It's a lot for them to deal with children. doesn't matter how old they are, at the end of the day, parents are parents.
Well, exactly. You know, and I've seen my mum go through it with my grandma when she wasn't well, yeah, and had operations and things, and how it affected her. And, you know, my mum was older than you. And so, and also even my kids, like I went to get the vaccine last week, and, you know, they were really worried. And like one of my kids who's 10, she was like, oh no, I'm really scared about mommy. And, you know, even that, they worry, don't they? Because
yeah,
you're their anchor, basically.
Exactly. So, that's exactly it. So, but I think now, like I said, initially it was a shock for everyone, you know, all of us really, you know, a massive shock. But now I think
that it had come back.
I don't want to use the phrase that we've come to terms with it, but I think it's something that we know is there, and I think it's just, you know, sometimes like when I have my oncologist appointment, then, you know, things become a little more real again. So the other day I had the hospice got in touch with me, you know, just to have a chat and, you know, see how I am, do I need anything. And again, it's one of those things where, again, advised by my oncologist, where, you know, we need to start building those relationships for my children, you know, to have that support circle. And it's these type of things that I think we tend to overlook. I guess I'm fortunate that I am well enough to be able to put these things in place for them, to make sure that they have a support circle and, you know, they build those relationships. And, you know, just so, I don't know, again, at the same time as well, no matter how much you try and prepare or prepare yourself or prepare, you're never prepared for these type of things.
No. How did you know that it came back? Like, did you find another lump or?
Oh, no. I wish I had. It would have been easier and maybe I would have found it earlier. So the first time around, I found a lump and obviously went to my GP, etc. Mm-hmm. Second time around, there was no lump because it's not in the breast. The type of cancer is breast cancer, but mm-hmm. it's not, unfortunately, in the breast. It's actually spread to other parts of the body. And because it's spread, there's no way I was going to be able to feel it or anything. The only way... I had a gut feeling that something was, I initially put it down to work, being overworked. I was traveling a lot with my work as well, my job. So I put it down to being overtired, jet lagged, etc. You know, but I don't know, just something that, you know, that gut feeling, that voice inside you, I just knew something wasn't right. And this type of tiredness was completely different to my normal tiredness. And usually I'm a very active person. I have to be doing something.
Yeah.
You know, I have to be doing something, whether it's working or, you know, housework or whatever it is, I just have to be doing something. But this was so unusual and a different type of tiredness. And then I started getting bone aches. And I think that's when I knew that something wasn't right. And then they did a scan and it was diagnosed from there. So, it's not in the breast, but the type is breast cancer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, okay, so how do you feel generally, like, you know, when you wake up in the morning and... physically and emotionally, is it a struggle?
So it all depends on how the night went. So last night as well, it wasn't a great night. I was in a lot of pain at night as well. So for me, the only way, you know, I try and persevere with the pain as much as I can. Mm-hmm. And then it gets to the point where, you know what, I just want to sleep and I'll do anything just to sleep. So again, I have morphine at night, oral morph at night, which is prescribed. I just want to say that's prescribed mm-hmm. by my oncologist. So I'll have that and that will help me sleep. But again, and then waking up as well, it's not like I can, oh yeah, I'm up now and I can do this, mm-hmm. and this. You know, it takes me time to actually start moving, if that makes sense. So, you know, yes, I'll get up, but it's a very slow start. It's not, you know, and then it, again, like I said, it depends on how the day or how the night went. And, you know, if it's not been a good night, then like yesterday, I just couldn't get out of bed. So, you know, it's a day to day thing. And, you know, some days there are really good days and I do take advantage of those days. I really take advantage of the days where I'm feeling good and, you know, I am having a good role. You know, I will make an effort now to try and go out. I will make an effort to walk, you know, and just do a few things. But I do find there's only one thing I can do in one day.
Okay. And then, okay, so it, like you said, it depends on the night, and sometimes some days are a struggle and stuff. What was I going to say to you? I mean, I do admire the fact that you are so positive and upbeat, and you've called your Insta page Laughing with Cancer.
With Cancer.
And are there some days, though, where you do, you're like, oh, you know, it's not, the positivity is not coming, and you have to, I don't know, get it from somewhere.
You have to find it from somewhere, So I guess most of the times, like you said, I am trying to keep positive about it. It's like my oncologist, I mean, he always says to me, first time around as well, and this time around, he'll always say, every time I see you, you're always laughing, you know. And he actually said, do you understand the seriousness of what's going on here?
Yeah.
And again, my approach to everything is like, you have two options in life, right? Either I sit down and cry, or I get up and think, okay, fine, it is, let's deal with it. And let's just get on with it, you know, soldier on with it. And I'm not one of those who's going to sit down and cry about it, you know, because that will just that will just kill me off anyway, right? If I just sit down and cry and feel depressed about it, or, you know, like, so for me, it's like, I've got to get up. And, you know, there's always something to be grateful for in life. The very fact that I've woken up in the morning, right? That's something to be grateful for me. Yeah. The very fact that I can move, whether it's slowly, I'm still grateful for that. You know, there are so many people with cancer or who have had their journeys where they're unable to do that, where they're unable to move, unable to walk, you know. And so I look for the positives within myself. You know, even if it's one thing that I achieve throughout the day, for me, that's positive. You know, I've managed to do that. And I have to accept the fact that I cannot work at 100 miles an hour again like I used to. So, you know, once I've accepted that, as long as I do something throughout the day, then yeah, that's a positive. I think it's how you look at life, how you look at things. It's what you choose to look at.
I mean, some people who don't have cancer and they're healthy, they don't often do this. You know, they don't often look for the positives, and they actually focus on the negative. So yes, it's a whole mindset. It is
a mindset, definitely a mindset. And I believe everyone can change their mindset. Now, again, this is my opinion. I believe everyone has it within them to change their mindset. You've just got to start somewhere, you know, start somewhere. Sometimes we have so much going on, you know, there's just so much like coming from here, there, work, kids, family, anything, whatever it is. There's so much. And yeah, it's very overwhelming. So the way I've done it and helped myself is that I try and break it up into bite-sized pieces. You know, you try and break things up and then try and, you know, prioritize what's important to you and focus on that.
Are you working now, or you're not working now?
I have actually stopped working now. Mm-hmm. So towards the end of last year, I started getting very, very tired. And I love my job, and I wish I could still carry on working. But unfortunately, it was impacting my health. I was getting very, very tired, and it got to the point where I guess I had to make that decision. It was actually one of my daughters actually said to me, I've got twin daughters, and one of them actually said to me, she goes, are you just going to keep working? And then that's it. And that really, really hit me, really hit me. And I was like, yeah, she's right. I don't want to work and then not have this interim, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, so I want to be able to do things that I haven't been able to do while I've been working. You know, my job has been quite long hours, etc. So I've not been able to catch up with certain friends or meet people, or, you know, just do little things, you know. So, and again, so this was my time as well. So this was my time to actually make use of the free time that I have, and, you know, start doing my Instagram page and start, you know, trying to help people, which is something that I've always wanted to do, and I've just never had the time to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing as well, when we say I've never had the time to do it, Well, it's making that time, right? And so I'm guilty of that as well. Like, this is something I've always wanted to do, help people and, you know, just motivate people with anything. And again, like me saying as well, I didn't have the time to do it because I was prioritizing my time on my work, which again, you have to, but there's a balance, right? So, so I'm just finding that time now to do, you know, this type of stuff, do a lot of reading and catch up in what I need to do.
But do you now feel like I want to make the most of it because you feel like you're running out of time?
Yeah, I do. I do.
And have you had those difficult conversations? Like, you've obviously spoken to your oncologist and, you know, it's not curable, right, what you have?
Yeah, it's
had those conversations. Yeah. So have you had those how long have I got left conversations?
Yeah, I had that when he first diagnosed in 2019 in December. That was when he told me, you know, it's stage four, it's incurable. And then it was actually, I asked him the question in terms of timelines. So he did give me a timeline. Again, it's an average. So, you know, I'm not saying that is it, but it's a figure or a number that I have in my head. Mm. And initially I did keep thinking about that, but then I realized that if I keep thinking about that, I don't want to attract that as well.
Yeah.
Right. So for me, it's like, okay, he's given me something, but it's an average. So let me focus on the fact that I'm not going to meet that figure. I'm going to go beyond that figure or those number of years rather.
Yeah.
So, but it was a lot because the first Christmas or the first December in 2019, you know, the only thing that came to my head was, oh my God, I might not be here next year. And again, this time as well, during that, you know, December again, you know, you sort of relive the whole of last year and relive what happened and sequence of events, you know, on this date, this happened, this happened, this happened. And again, it was like, well, that's a year gone out of my timeline. So that is always somewhere there at the back of my head, but I have to make that choice not to focus on that. Because if I focus on that, then that's all I'm going to keep thinking, because then I'm just going to start reducing the days, you know, before I know it, it'll go to months and then, you know, and then days, etc. So I have to make that choice to positively not think about that. And it's really difficult, especially when you go to that month. Like when I start approaching November, December, I start thinking, okay, this happened in November and then this happened and then this happened, you know, and so it's very difficult to come out of that mindset. But again, I have to make those choices.
And is your family thinking like that as well? Like, oh, you know, this might be mom's last Christmas. This might be mom's last. This, like, are they thinking like that?
They never talk to me in that respect. So this is one thing they've never, and I feel they don't talk to me about it is because they don't want to upset me. So it becomes that vicious circle. I don't want to upset them. They don't want to upset me. So I'm like, we need to talk. And that was one of the reasons why the hospice got in touch with me as well, you know, to provide that type of counselling. Sometimes it's easier to talk to people for this, especially something like this, to talk to somebody who's not part of your family or your, you know, your friend circle or whatever. It's easier for them to get that professional guidance, really. So that's something that we're starting off now to get that counselling. But no, they don't really talk to me about that. But, you know, we have to have these difficult conversations. And initially it sounded a bit, you know, a bit morbid and a bit, oh, I don't really want to do this. But then I think I myself sort of started laughing about it.
Yeah.
You know, and turning it around. And then, so now when we do, you know, talk about these things, you know, for example, I had to write my will, I had to do my power of attorney, and I had to do these things. The only way that I could get my head around it or get the kids or get them involved with it as well, you know, I just used to laugh and joke and say, well, I'm not giving it to you and I'm not giving it to you. And, you know, so you've got to try and again, it's not looking, it's just trying. That's my approach, you know, to try and laugh about it.
I've laughed about things like that with my parents. I mean, the difference between my parents and yourself is that, you know, you have cancer. They don't have cancer. They're older than you. But, you know, they have started thinking about things like wills and funerals and stuff. My mom's like, keep this money because, like, you can have.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Mom, don't, we have money for your funeral, just enjoy yourself. Like, I had to say that to her. And things like, you know, we've had like jokes as well, like, put me in this river, put my ashes in that river.
Yeah,
like, you know, I'll just put you there, actually. Like, you know, or shall I put you in the house somewhere? So
yeah.
So you've done that as well. Just
yeah, we had to laugh about it as well. I was like, yeah, you know, first time I was right, yeah, I want to go back to India, and you know, take me back to India, you know, when I. And then I was like, no, I'm fine. You'll just go here in the Thames, whatever. So, you know, we just have to laugh about it. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to be here anyway, so it doesn't matter. So, you know, you just have to laugh about these things, because there's no other way to do it. Otherwise, it becomes such a...
Exactly.
It is a serious conversation. It is a very serious conversation, but it's the approach you take to it. You know, it really is. And then later on, you know, when I'm not here, and you know, when they do have to go through all of this, I want them to remember the laughs we had about it.
Yeah.
You know, the laughs to say, oh, you know, Mama said this or this or this, whatever. You know, just remember the laughs and remember, you know, yeah, just be happy. Remember the good times.
What about your family in India? Like, Mom and Dad siblings? Do you have Mom and Dad siblings there?
So yeah, that's another story.
Oh, is it? Okay.
No, but that's fine. No. So I was actually adopted. So my real family is in India, but it's within the bigger family, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So it was two brothers. Yeah. So I am very fortunate that way, that I know who my family are and my siblings are, and we are very close. Unfortunately, because of COVID, the situation, my brother was unable to come. So, you know, they'd had their visa and everything ready, but COVID kicked in and lockdown, etc. So they've not been able to come, which is really unfortunate, because I don't know if I'm ever going to go back. I don't know. But so let's see. I mean, being over there, it's very difficult, because you don't have that support as much as I would like to, or that, you know, that somebody to talk to, or just, you know, just having that sibling love when it's so far away. But,
yeah.
It's okay. At least I have it.
And are there things that you now want to do? Like, have you got a list? It's like, oh, I want to go here. I've always wanted to do this, and I'm going to do this now. Are there things that you have, is it a list you're working through then?
Yeah. So the thing is, I always get confused when people say, do you have a bucket list? Because even first time around, people are like, do you have a bucket list? And I'm like, well, what do we actually mean by a bucket list? Because my bucket list is, I just want to visit so many countries.
Yeah,
like, I want to go here. I don't know, is that a bucket list? Because there's so many places I want to go to, and you know, again, I want to go to it, and I'm hoping I can. But for me, it's all health permitting as well. You know, am I able to travel? And now with COVID, is that going to stop it? You know, so I guess there's a lot more factors I need to consider now. But yeah, I've got a list of places I want to go to and things I want to do, and you know, so let's see. I'm going to try.
Yeah.
But let's see.
Well, I hope you can do what you, you know, get through that list.
Let's see.
And, you know, with things kind of calming down a little bit, COVID-wise, and things opening up, so you might get to do that soon, which would be good.
Yeah, there's a lot of traveling I want to do. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but we are trying to, like, with the kids as well, it's just about making memories now, isn't it? And everything is just about making memories. So, you know, let's see, even if it's somewhere within the UK, just go somewhere for a little while, change the scenery, just have some fun. That's all it's about. And I think life is what you make it. Life is exactly what you make it. If you choose to have fun and be happy, you will be happy. If you choose not to, then unfortunately you won't.
And you mentioned God before, and how you felt about God and what happened, and are you religious, and how is that helping you? Is it helping you right now?
It is. I think I'd like to say I'm more spiritual than religious. I do believe that there is something out there.
I'd also call myself more spiritual than religious, but I'm from a mishmash of religions in my family anyway, so
I do believe, and I believe, yes, I did feel a little bit betrayed. But then again, like I said, you know, you have to understand, I don't think God puts things on us. You know, it's happened, but I just have that faith and that trust that he'll see me through it. you know, however it is. So having that that trust and faith, and that's what kept me going first time around as well. Because a lot of my friends would say, you know, you're really strong, really positive, really this, but it's always been my faith that's kept me going. You know, I think knowing that you've got someone with you or something with you, it just gives you that, that trust, that faith, that confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And for people that are going through what you're going through, whether it's cancer that can be cured or whether they've been told it's incurable, like, where can people get support from? Are there places that provide that kind
of support? Yeah, lots and lots of places. So Macmillan Cancer, they are very, very good at providing support as well. So, you know, everyone can reach out to them, whoever needs to. They're very good and they will guide you. If you go to your nearest Macmillan Centre, they will guide you in terms of where you can get support. There's also an organisation called Look Good, Feel Better. And they're specifically for women with cancer who do help women, you know, it's just little things like you lose your eyebrows, things that you don't think about, you know, on a normal day, you'll lose your eyebrows, you lose mm-hmm. your eyelashes, you know, and all of this impacts your confidence.
Yeah.
It really, really does. And it, you know, unfortunately, unless you go through it, I don't think anyone could understand what that means. And it took me a very long time to get my confidence back. But yeah, sorry, coming back to Look Good, Feel Better. That's an organization for women, mainly for women, really. Who have lost their eyebrows, eyelashes, etc. And it just helps them in terms of applying makeup, what products to use, and just, you know, giving them that bit of boost.
You mentioned about hair falling out, you know, you mm-hmm. had one of your breasts removed, and these are like symbols of femininity, aren't they? That
correct,
people correct. Consider symbols of femininity. You don't have to have these to be a woman, but obviously this is a general stereotype, and we feel very mm-hmm. particular about things like our hair and our bodies and skin and things like that. So how did it affect you when you had to shave your head and have the mastectomy? How did it affect your confidence?
I completely lost my confidence. I remember shaving my head, I just burst out crying the minute he put the shaver on the razor on my head, because I was like, oh my God, you know, that's it, my hair's gone. And you don't realize the impact. And yes, your hair does start growing back, But it's a transition that you go through, right? Losing your boob. Yes, it's very easy to say, yeah, you've had a mastectomy, you've had a reconstruction. Until you have that reconstruction, you have like a silicone that they give you to put in, you know, put in your bra. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you look the same, you know, or you feel the same, more importantly. I knew every time I went out or got ready, I knew that there was something not right about me. I knew I didn't have a boob. I knew that I had this silicon, and always trying to adjust it, you know, do my boobs look the same? Is one up, is one down, or whatever? You know, that's consciously at the back of your head. I remember one time I'd gone out with my friends and we'd gone out for a meal, but all I remember thinking at that time is, everyone looks so beautiful. Everyone looks so perfect. You know, their hair's so lovely. Makeup so right, you know, they look lovely, they look gorgeous, beautiful. And then I thought, there's me, right? And if you saw me, you'd probably think, oh my God, you look fine, there's nothing wrong with you. But I didn't feel it. I felt I didn't have my confidence. I just felt I looked really ugly. And that's something that I can't explain to anybody, unless, unfortunately, again, unless you've been through it, I can't explain that feeling. And yeah, my friend probably thought I was being a miserable little cow again, but it's not something that you can share. There's a time and place for everything, right? But I just remember going there and I'm thinking, I look really awful. I just wanted to leave. I just wanted to leave because I just didn't have the confidence anymore, you know, for anything really, you know, because you look at yourself, or I looked at myself at that point and I was like, oh, my hair's not right. It's too short. Or, you know, obviously I'd lost my eyebrows, you know, my eyebrows, you know, maybe my eyebrows are not done properly. And, you know, all of this stuff is all external, right? And it shouldn't really matter at all. And I think that's one thing that I've learned this time around is, I don't care what I look like. I don't care, you know, if I don't fit in or, you know, or with everyone else, but I am who I am and I'm not going to let anything stop me.
Knowing that now your cancer is incurable, how has this changed how you're living your life now?
So, well, clearly there's a massive impact on how I am living my life. But I think the biggest thing that, or the biggest message I want to give out to everybody, if I can, is that for me, whatever comes my way, whatever has happened first time round and now second time round, I am not going to let this dictate my life. You know, I am determined to get on with my life, you know, and I will lead my life in how I want to lead my life. Yes, admittedly, there will be some restrictions in terms of what I can and can't do, but that doesn't mean I just stop living, right? That doesn't mean I just sit in my room or sit in my home and just think, oh, you know, this is the end of it, because it's not the end of it. It's not the end until I'm ready. It's not the end. And, you know, it's very easy to give up or accept and say, okay, this has happened, this is diagnosis, and that's it. But for me, I really want people to know, and I want people to hopefully who are in similar situations or have struggles in life or challenges in life to say it's not the end until you know, until you say so, until you've done what you want to do, until you want to live how you live, you know, just get up, get going and do what you need to do. And also, I think the other thing that I've realized is a lot through what I've been going through and a lot of it through COVID as well, is that I stopped caring about what people actually think about. You know, I think as a society, we're all prone to worrying or trying to be politically correct with people or try and not hurt people, especially those that we, you know, care about and love or whatever. But and sometimes you feel that there's an obligation to do things or say things or be part of a social circle or whatever it is. But to me, I think no, I'm not going to do that anymore. You know, I'm not going to try and fit into something.
Is it something that you used to do? Did you used to do that a lot?
I think you always try and people please because you want to be accepted. And I think a lot of it I have learned has stemmed from maybe things that I've been through in the past, which again is probably not for here, but maybe later on we can discuss that. But there's, you know, things that I've been through. Maybe that stemmed from that. I don't know. But I'm not gonna people please anymore. I'm not gonna worry about what people care anymore, you know, to do the thing to, you know, obviously you don't go out hurting people and, you know, intentionally doing things or, you know, becoming a rebel or anything like that. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to go and see who I wanna see. I'm gonna go and, you know, go out where I wanna go out. And I'm just gonna stop people pleasing, I think. I think that's the biggest thing that we have. You know, you start people pleasing because you want to be accepted. But when you're in a situation like I am in my example, where I know I have limited time, for me, it's living my life. You know, at the end of the day, I always, you know, we have one life. It's not a rehearsal for us. And therefore, you know, and life is very short. And I know that, trust me, I know life is very short. So just go out there and live and do what you need to do and just enjoy yourself and be happy and live for yourself. Live for yourself. I think that's the biggest lesson. You live for yourself.
So I just want to say thank you just for sharing your story today. And
no, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it. I want to say thank you to my friend Vina as well, who really encouraged me for doing this. So yeah, thank you to Makeup. Vina.
Yes, and Vina was on the M Word episode that I did.
Yes,
that menopause is brilliant.
Yeah. So yeah, Vina and I go back a long way. So thank you to her for giving me the encouragement and the support to actually do something like this. You know, yes, I have wanted to help, and you know, I want to try and encourage people to keep strong, keep positive. But I also needed that encouragement to do that. You know, and so yeah, I'm grateful that I got that from her.
So, Bodhi, just remind me of your page if people want to follow you, where they can.
Yep, it's Laughing with Cancer.
Laughing with Cancer on Instagram, yeah?
On Instagram, sorry, yeah.
Okay, Laughing with Cancer on Instagram. So, thank you, everybody, for listening, and make sure you do follow Bodhi's page. If you want to get in touch, then it's mommyimperfect@gmail.com. You can follow me on Instagram at Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect or at Rina D. Annabelle. I'm going to be back next week. Until then, take care. Bye.